Morning, Roy.
Right then, Kevin. Science has never been my strong suit. I have a significant interest in
shame
it.
Shame on you. Shame
well,
on you.
Well, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, I've got a calculator.
Okay, that's fine. It's a start, anyway.
It's a start. Tell us about what it is you've achieved, please.
Well, your calculator has a computer system driving it, a microprocessor probably, or at least a chip. Well, what we've got is a piece of technology, a robot, where it's a little physical thing on wheels, but the brain of the robot is not a computer chip, it's a biological brain, in a way, just like the brain that you and I have, only much, much smaller.
So how do you get it from being the standard, if you like, into being a biological one? I mean, to me, biological suggests kind of like flesh.
Well, it is exactly that, yes. I mean, these are neurons. They originate in a rat, I should say, but what we do is separate the neurons, lay them down onto a slide. Now, on the slide is connected electrodes, the little pieces of metal that we can send signals to the neurons and also pick up signals from them. We then feed them with similar material to maybe some of the athletes in the Olympic Games are having. It's got nutrients in it, it's got minerals. And within about 24 hours, the neurons start linking together, as neurons do. These are brain cells we're talking about.
Right.
And within a week, it's acting in a basic way, something like a brain. We can then link it up to the robot body, the physical body, so effectively this biological brain, which has approximately 100,000 brain cells. So it's
right.
Not like the human 100 billion, it's not in that, but it is a respectable number, a biological brain, 100,000 brain cells that is controlling this robot.
Well, it's a beginning, isn't it? It's like if you go back to the origins of the first computer, which was the size of a detached house, if I'm not rightly mistaken, at the beginning.
Yeah. And this time it's the other way around. It's a very, very small brain, but it's a beginning, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, the basics of it. So taking that a step further, I mean, on the face of it, when people would read the headline, biological computer created, they're going to be thinking of cyborgs and things like that. But the actual aim is, I would imagine you probably do want to create something like that, but you're looking at it from a kind of medical point of view, are you not?
Well, a range of things. I mean, the science fiction cyborg, yes, it is. It's part animal, if you like, and part machine. And clearly, some of those aspects that link with artificial intelligence in a serious scientific way. How does it learn? Can we use some of what we've learned in artificial intelligence with this system? Yes, we do want to investigate that. But also, yes, there's a serious medical side of things. We can put the robot into situations, simple things, where there's a wall on one side and maybe it's clear in front of it and so on, and we can see how the memories of it being in that position manifest themselves in the brain. Which neurons fire? How do they stimulate other neurons and so on? So what we really want to look at is how do memories actually appear in this brain, which clearly have a direct link to things like Alzheimer's disease, which more and more people, as we're getting older, more and more people are suffering from.
Well, so if we look at it from that point of view, before people get a bit scared about the robots taking over the world, we are looking at people who maybe have been affected by a stroke, or maybe, like you just mentioned there, dementia.
A stroke is a very good example, because what we're able to do, and what we're already doing with the brain, is applying chemicals to take part of the brain and almost close it down, make it difficult for signals to be sent, whereas other part of the brain is perfectly okay. And what we're trying to do is to see how the other part of the brain can take over some of the roles, some of the functioning. So
yeah, because that's what happens in a stroke, isn't it?
It's exactly that. So we can look at it here and try and force the issue, because this is, if you like, it's a little model brain we've got in the lab. So we can say, okay, how can we improve the way that the working part of the brain takes over some of the functioning? Or how can we improve how the memories are stored and recalled? By applying chemicals and electrical signals. And ultimately, in long term, can we then apply that as far as humans are concerned?
Well, that leads me on to my next question, which is a bit of a how long is a piece of string, really. What timescale could we be looking at before this may well be in service in hospitals, perhaps?
Oh, well, I mean, you don't know. It is how long is a piece of string. The important thing is that a piece of string can be very, very short. Some of the results that we can get from this could very, very quickly actually change things in the medical world. It just depends how lucky we are, whether we, you know, we plump for the right experiment on the right day and we get the right sort of result. One thing to say with this, because it's a biological brain, it becomes very, very unpredictable. It's not like a computer that's programmed that we know what it's going to do. I mean, to be honest, we actually have a number of what I'm describing as a brain, a number of the cultures. And from day to day, we can put one of the brains, link it to the robot, and it can perform very well. We think, great. Another time, it can be quite aggressive. And we can, I don't know, get to learn, I guess, maybe how's the brain going to be affected by whether it's a hot day outside or whether the robot isn't performing well. There's all sorts of things that can affect because it's a biological thing. It plays up, in other words.
Well, it goes without saying, if what you're developing is what we already have anyway, is it conceivable in the future that this thing is going to start thinking for itself?
Well, that's a philosophical argument, I guess, from the word go. In a way, I would say, well, it probably is thinking for itself. But maybe we can learn even then. What does that mean? It's not thinking for itself like a human does, as far as we know. But perhaps we can look at that more from a scientific point of view. What does thinking actually mean? We can investigate it there. Yeah. So I would say, yeah, it probably is thinking for itself.
Right, it's City Talk 105.9. My guest on the phone this morning, Professor Kevin Warwick from the School of Systems Engineering down in Reading, I believe that is, isn't it, Kevin?
At University of Reading, yep.
Yes, is indeed. So let's obviously move into the other aspect of this, which would be the science fiction action, you know, aspect of it, which that's how we would look at it in this day and age.
Do you,
first of all, let me put a question to you. Do you believe in the future we will be living where we'll have, if you like, cyborgs as like servants for us, if you like, doing mundane jobs around the house?
I think we've got to see it. People have said it, but it's true. We are an aging society in the Western world. A lot of people getting older, and also not so many young people around to help the older people. Now, we hope, as we're getting older, that we're going to be fit and healthy and be able to do things, but that's not necessarily so. So as far as the research we're doing, one aspect of it is trying to understand some of the problems that we get, the mental problems, particularly like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, to help us in our older age. Maybe we don't get affected by them so much. But the other side is to look at robots in the future that could help around the home. Physically, in a way, that's probably an easier way to look at things. We can get them walking, we can get them moving around. But when it comes to the mental aspects, we need them to be fairly clever, to adapt, to adjust, to communicate, perhaps, with the human. And that's where I think a biological-brained robot could really, really have the edge. It could interact with the human in a much better way.
And, of course, the commercial implications of this are huge. I mean, do you perhaps maybe envisage in the future, men and women with partners who are, in fact, cyborgs?
Well, it has been muted, yeah. I mean, it is a thing. I mean, even the sexual side of things could be potentially there.
Yeah.
It can get really weird, to be honest, because the brain cells that are used for the biological, for the robot, effectively, I mean, I hate to say it, but it could be you. And, you know, I could scientifically take some of your brain cells.
Oh, I hope not.
And then separate them, culture them, so you would end up with this entity, this robot that you're living with, that is you.
Wow.
Is it going to disagree with you?
Yeah, incredible stuff. So we looked at that aspect of it, and then we have to look now. There could be, whereas your motivation for wanting to create this is obviously for the right reasons, but what perhaps maybe if you've got some kind of black government department who's thinking, hey, listen, we can apply this cyborg, if you like, in the military. What about that aspect of it?
Well, I think a lot of the research I do, there is a military angle to it. I mean, what I try to do is to be completely open about it, and hence talking with you now. That people know the technology is there. This is what's going on. It's true. It's real. It's not science fiction. It's actual science. This is what's happening. And it's really down to society then, I believe, of which I am a member. Do we clamp down on it ultimately? Now we know it can be done. We perhaps don't want it to move forward in that way. But it is very difficult as far as the military is concerned, because they're trying not to tell people what's exactly going on,
yeah.
other than in terms of what the end results potentially could do. But again, with the military, if it's our team, if it's our side, we might feel, yeah, that's okay. But the real worry is if it's the other team that gets it, the other side.
Yeah.
And at least if we know what's possible with the technology, we can perhaps make a few decisions about it and try and make it more difficult for it to be developed if we feel it's the wrong thing. But as with a lot of these things, there's all sorts of commercial opportunities. There are positives, robots around the home, but there is a potential dangerous military aspect.
Have you encountered any ethical problems with this? Perhaps maybe religious organisations not quite pleased with what you're doing?
To be honest, no. I mean, we do get ethical approval, written, formal. We go the appropriate route in order to, you know, with it, so there's no sort of behind-the-scenes thing going on here. But to be honest, I do get some interaction, people commenting from a military point of view. But literally, I got an email this morning, and it said, "Godspeed." So somebody very religiously motivated felt, no, this research, yeah, go for it. I think largely because of the medical aspect, you know, really what we're doing, there is a strong possibility that we could have at least some impact on understanding Alzheimer's disease, which clearly can affect thousands of people. And anybody that has had a parent or relative that suffers from Alzheimer's disease, I mean, it is really distressing, not only for the person themselves, but for all members of the family. And hence, if the research we're doing can have a small impact or a bigger impact, even better, then I think that a lot of religious people would feel very positively towards it.
Ethically, that would obviously be a very good thing.
Oh, clearly. I think there's no question about it. I mean, here there's a question, okay, we take the neurons initially from rats, but rats don't tend to be a particular popular creature anyway. Okay, there are animal rights issues, yes, but we have this big problem, Alzheimer's. We have another problem, stroke patients. We have another problem, Parkinson's disease. And if we can make a small impact on any or all of them, surely it's worth it.
Absolutely. In terms of when I open up newspapers and things like this and see read the internet, the kind of things that are available in this day and age, and if we go back 100 years ago or so when we couldn't even fly, it is amazing the way the world's going. And certainly in the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years, the speed really has intensified with technology. Where do you see us being in the next 40 years? What kind of things would you expect to be commonplace in society within the next 30 to 40 years?
Yeah, I mean, you're quite right. I mean, the cell phone within the last, well, even 20 years, you could say, but certainly 30 years, it's gone from not being physically possible to everybody's having one, and
yeah.
we're communicating in a whole new way. You walk through town centres now and people are talking and you think they're talking to you. They're not. They're talking on the cell phone. So I think you really have to open your mind to think in 30, 40 years, the world is going to be dramatically different. We are going to have technology that will dramatically change the way we do things. And you have to look outside the box. Now, for me, it's implant technology. I can see the possibility of linking our brains, our nervous system, to a computer network opens up a whole raft of different opportunities.
Wow.
New sensory inputs. At the moment, we're limited to the five senses we've got. The possibility of sensing the world in infrared and ultraviolet and X-ray and so on is there. But I think the main thing for me is if we start to link even just nervous systems together, brain to brain, we can start communicating in a whole new way. We don't need to speak. We can think to each other.
So,
and that, I see, is the real biggie. But technically, it's there. And sort of knowing, yes, we are going to be able to do this, it becomes more of a social thing. How quickly do we want it? And are there going to be the commercial drives in the first instance to push it along to fruition?
So what you're saying is that in the future that people will be walking around, they won't be holding a little bit of hard word up to the air. They'll literally be thinking, oh, I've got to make that call. You make the call in your mind.
Yep, the hardware will be part of them.
And you think that is a likelihood as opposed to a possibility?
Well, technically, yes. It becomes then more a case, how well it will work, we don't know until we try it. The basics we've already done. I mean, as you know, from my last implant experiment, linking my nervous system with my wife's nervous system, and we sent very, very basic telegraphic signals from nervous
system. You actually did this?
Oh, yes, yes, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So we've done the basics, but then all we've done is nervous system to nervous system with implants. We've not yet done brain to brain. That's the big one. How broad a form of communication can we achieve? I believe it will be, extremely different to what we in terms of thoughts and images and concepts and abstract ideas. But that's just my belief. I still feel, though, technically with what we have done, it has opened the door to a whole new way of communicating. And that thing on its own, just that one thing, will, I believe, completely change the world.
Yes, there's no two ways about that. Let me just ask you this one before I let you go, Kevin, if that's okay. You mentioned neurons. I can't say I'm hugely knowledgeable in neurons. I get the basics. Mm. We've got a guy that's coming on the show in a few weeks' time called Ron Mallett. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No.
He's the guy that's developing, he's got a theory, he's backing it up with the hardware by all accounts, that he's going to make this time machine. Mm-hmm. I think neurons play their part within it. What's your view on that?
Cool. Time. I mean, looking at it scientifically, what I believe as far as time travel is concerned, that going backwards, I can't see how it's possible. I mean, maybe I just don't know. If we look at another dimension and other dimensions, maybe we can see how to do it. But certainly thinking in the world physically as it is at the moment, traveling backwards, I can't see. Traveling forwards at different speeds, yes, I mean, that does seem to be simply applying relativity. If we travel around more quickly, then we can live longer and so on. Okay, typically it's only a matter of a few seconds, but if we could do it fast enough, yes, we can travel forwards in time more slowly or more quickly. So some aspects of it I can go for, but travelling backwards in time, I can't see that.
Right. Amazing. Listen, Kevin, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. A fascinating breakthrough and a very useful breakthrough to mankind. No two ways about that. And we will watch with interest on this. Is there anything that's actually available via websites or anything like that where people could find out more about I'll call it an invention for want of a better term to use?
Well, I think there actually is something on YouTube now. If you Googled... probably even if you Googled robot or went to YouTube and searched on robot, but say rat brain robot on a Google would give you a video image. I think it's about a 1 minute clip that appears on YouTube, and that gives you, it does show you the process, how we put it all together, and it shows the robot actually being driven by a biological brain. So if anybody's there doesn't believe it or says no, this is not true, go and have a look.
Great stuff. Dr. Kevin Warnock, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning here on City Talk 105.9.
Thanks very much. It's been great.